Welcome to Back to Health with Dr. Cale Copeland. He has been a chiropractic provider to the Victoria Grizzlies Junior A Hockey Club for 9 seasons and involved in healthcare for over 2 decades. Get ready to be inspired to greater vitality, performance, energy, and health as he interviews experts every 2 weeks. Now here's Dr. Cale.
Hey everyone, this is Dr. Cale Copeland and I'm your host for Back to Health. Thank you for being here. This is episode number 11 and I'm very lucky and excited to be speaking with parenting guru Allison Rees. We're going to talk about health on a family and individual level. Now before she joins us, if you have any questions or you require assistance, you can reach us here anytime at Victoria Family Chiropractic at 250-592-5553 or online at www.vfchiro.com. So here's a little about Allison before we chat. Allison Rees has been teaching life seminars since 1993. Many professionals and parents have attended these courses in Victoria through word of mouth alone. Life seminars has become one of the largest and longest running parenting programs in the world, running for over 30 years with an average of 100 parents attending each 8-week course. Allison's articles regularly appear in Parenting Magazine, The Times Columnist, Family 411, and Island Parent Magazine with her monthly cutouts. She's co-authored 2 books, Sidestepping the Power Struggle and The Parent-Child Connection. Allison has been featured as the expert on various television programs and was the co-host of the Island Parent radio show for many years. Allison's presentations are down to earth, honest, and to the point. I can attest to that. Her lectures are packed with insights, humor, and audience participation. While her subjects are pre-planned, her lectures are not, which is why many people don't tire of the material when they repeat the courses. She has supported thousands of families in this community and is rapidly expanding her knowledge to other professionals worldwide. Allison also facilitates a couples course and a workplace course. For more information about Allison's services, please visit her website at www.lifeseminars.com. Allison, thanks for being here and welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Cale. What a great introduction.
Yeah, no, I'm pumped to have you. So yeah, my wife and I attended your 2-hour workshop in November. It was awesome and it really made an impact in our home and, you know, from our perspective anyway. And I'm really excited to take your 8-week course in the new year.
I'm so glad. And, you know, the funny thing about the 2-hour presentation you attended is I decided to take a chance that night and kind of go off the mainstream. You know, sidestepping can be a little bit more mainstream where we talk about, you know, kids' behavior and temperament and discipline, et cetera. But I thought, you know, I think people are really ready to hear information that goes deeper. And I think we all know that it's not really about our kids. It's about us. It's who we are.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing, for real. And we're pumped to learn more.
Well, I have to say that I am thrilled because, you know, I took this course, Life Seminars, in 1991 when my kids were babies because my colleague, Dr. Allison Miller, actually wrote the original material in 1981. So when I came across the tale, I felt like I had found the mothership. And I honestly, even though I present, you know, probably several times a week in my busy season, I get new ahas all the time.
Yeah, it's great.
It just doesn't end.
Well, if there's any parents listening, you got to attend. But listen, let's get into this. So, I mean, what got you into parenting, this whole parenting thing?
Hmm. Well, it's funny, when I read people's background who do the kind of work that I do, I often read that they have always been interested in the human condition. Mm-hmm. And no word of a lie, I remember when I was probably 3 years old, kind of noticing how my parents were parenting me. So I think I've always been interested in human relationships. Hmm. And of course, you know, when my kids came along, I just thought, I'm not going to leave this to chance. I want to learn as much as I can. And, you know, and like everybody else, had my own struggles and limitations, and I knew I did. So wanted to do it a little bit differently than the way I was raised.
That's awesome. Well, it's certainly, it's so rewarding being a parent, and it's humbling. And well, that's great. So I guess here's a question I've got for you. I mean, from a parent's perspective, you know, why does the way we parent affect the parents' lives.
Affect the parents' lives?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or how?
Well, you know, when we're using a lot of ineffective methods, we don't feel good about ourselves. I mean, nagging, for example, the average parent nags their child 55 times a day. Now, I don't know where I got that. I've been saying it for years. I got it from someplace. If you've got two kids, that's 110 times a day. I always say if you're married, double that figure. And feel good to be the one doing the nagging. It doesn't feel good to lose your cool when your integrity and your value system says, I want to parent lovingly.
Yeah.
So it affects our self-esteem. And not only that, when we have mistaken ideas about how normal children behave, and when we actually think that our kids should be listening to us all the time and be well-mannered and be respectful and all these things that I hear about, when we really think that that's how normal kids behave, we think we're doing something wrong and or that there is something wrong with our child.
Wow.
And so who's good carrying that? You know what? I was having lunch the other day and I thought, we have lost the ability to recognize what a child looks like, regardless of ADHD or Asperger's or autism or whatever you want to say. If we have forgotten the true nature of childhood, then we're doing something wrong. We're holding the bar too high. We're not embracing, you know, just that fun and that play of childhood.
Oh.
We need to understand how children behave, period.
Yeah, I have to admit, when I attended that two-hour thing, I thought, okay, the pressure's off me, my kids aren't insane, you know, it felt so good to hear that. That's such an important perspective, and it does, you're right, it does, you know, if you're being a way that doesn't align with your values, it isn't good for you, right? It's not good for the parents, and it's not good for the kids, and yeah, so it's huge, isn't it? And you don't get an instruction manual, right?
Well, you do now. But
yeah, totally.
You know, the other big aha I got when teaching a class, it was probably 2 years ago where I had an unusual amount of men with young kids. You know, it was almost like three-quarter men, and so it was unusual, and it was a course on communication. And when the guys came back in the third week after going through how to talk effectively, I was blown away with the number of them that said, just because I am speaking differently and I am not kind of going on the attack, my kids are cooperating with me in a way that I never dreamt of. And it really was a reminder to me that, you know, we wouldn't react well to being talked to with disrespect or, you know, being fed or being put down. And so our kids really respond to us when we learn to make I statements and use safe communication, you know. Otherwise, they're protecting themselves. They're going into a defensive position. You know, there needs to be this spirit of emotional safety in the family, and kids feel that vibe very strongly.
Big time. Wow. It's so amazing, isn't it? And, you know, the other thing I got, and I'm going to tell my patients this, is that even if you're not a parent, listening to the stuff that you talk about, that it's just that communication, right? It's so valuable, whether you're a parent or not. But yeah, I know for some reason parents do have that tendency to speak in maybe a rude or disrespectful tone to their kids when they wouldn't to someone on the street, right? But okay, so here's another question too. I mean, I know the answer. I think everyone does, but I want to get your take on it. You know, does the way we parent our kids influence how they're going to turn out, or are they just hardwired and they're going to turn out the way they're going to turn out no matter what?
Okay, well, there's a bit of both, you know, nature, nurture. So we know that we come into the world with nine traits, you know, and that's predetermined genetically, our activity level, how distractible we are, how perceptive, you know, how persistent, our approach to new people, places, things. Are we adaptable? You know, what kind of mood do we have? Are we physically sensitive? Are we emotionally intense? Is our body very regular? So those are basically nine traits that we come into the world with.
Okay.
And so our personalities are formed as a result of those traits, plus our environment, which includes how we're parented. You know, okay. And if Freud was correct, it all happens before the age of seven. Now, I believe our self-esteem continues to grow and our self-awareness. But there, it's true that our parenting does have a huge impact on our kids, especially, Kale, their self-esteem, you know, their self-regard and their boundaries. So the answer is both.
Okay. So I wasn't going to go there, but I something you said there just kind of piqued my interest a little bit. You mentioned that we can influence their self-esteem.
Oh, yeah.
So
you want to know?
Yeah, and you know, it's tricky because we've got a short amount of time here, and we're gonna. So what are? Let's talk about that, because that sounds like a big deal, right? So what's something simple that parents can do to improve their, you know, have a positive influence on their kids' self-esteem?
Yep. I talk about three A's: accepting the unique temperament of your child and their immaturity level, which is kind of like, I take you as you are.
Okay.
You do not have to change a thing about yourself. Yes, we can work on your behavior, and I will describe it specifically. I will not label your character as rude or good or bad. So I take you as you are versus rejecting who you are. Affection, which is not just physical, but it's a sense that I'm always happy to see you.
Hmm.
You always meet me, teenager, 13-year-old who left the house in a mood. You know, I am happy to see you and be with you.
Oh, that's so
nice. And affirming your child's gifts and interests and feelings and really seeing who you're parenting. Those are the three A's to nurturing self-esteem. But I have to say this, that's all well and good. The stuff that gets in the way, Kale, and this is the big stuff, it's perfectionism, holding the bar too high, competitiveness, the false of self-esteem, where kids are, you know, given conditional love based on their letter grade or being good. Being good is a false basis of self-esteem, you know, and so we really need to get our head around who's in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
And there's cookie cutter method for parenting, because each child will pull out a different part of you and a different parenting.
So true.
You know? But language plays a huge role. Expectations, our belief systems, our own self-esteem, so that our ego isn't living through our child's success.
I know.
You know, and learning how to talk in a way that is clean. Because language is extremely powerful. And one of the courses that I run in the workplace, it's called How You Speak is How You Exist.
Wow.
And so I work a lot. Yeah, I work a lot with parents just around the power of the words that they use, even to their own self-esteem.
Can I take that, please? Sign me up for that. Yeah, it's so true. And I love what you said there, because I think, you know, if as parents we can step away and just watch our kids and love our kids and not have these unreasonable expectations of who they are as a person and what we want them to be, we get that greater joy of just watching them and loving them. And it's so great, isn't it? You know,
it's amazing. You know, I have to say, so in my Wednesday night courses, you know, say there's 100 people, I've got 16 volunteers that run the small groups within my course. And some of them have been with me for 27 years, some for 15 years.
Wow.
You know, and I mean, it is amazing. But one of the things that I hear them say is when they start parenting in this really conscious way, it goes way beyond getting your kids to eat dinner, way beyond getting out of the house in the morning in one piece. What they witness is seeing their kids using communication and speaking assertively and having this lovely sense of self-esteem, which is not thinking that they are better than anybody, you know? And so what I'm seeing today is that in our desire to contribute to our children's self-esteem, we are often getting into too much gushy praise, overprotection, you know, and our kids don't benefit from all this gushy praise.
I agree with
they
you.
Need, yeah, I mean, it's the love of being an ordinary human being that brings our extraordinary abilities.
Oh my goodness, that's exciting. Wow. Well, I'm so glad I asked you that question. That's amazing. Well, listen, I mean, I'm going to ask you another big one here, and obviously you're going to have to tailor this down because we don't have tons of time, but What are some of the foundational principles you teach? It sounds like one is just accepting your kid. You know, you talked a little bit about eye language. Like, what are maybe one or two big things that you could pass on here, foundationally?
Oh, boy. Here's my, as quick as I can be. Number one, get to understand your child's temperament and how kids that age typically behave. Number two, think about your philosophy of discipline and what it really means, and how do you teach responsibility in a way that's loving and creative and not punitive. Number three, learn how to speak in a way that doesn't attack your child's self-esteem. So learn how to make I statements, use your reflective listening, get your child involved in decision-making. And number four, look at boundaries, because children need to learn about healthy boundaries in their family of origin. It's much more difficult to learn about healthy boundaries when you're an adult and having to recover with a whole bunch of blind spots from childhood.
I hear you. Well, you know, I want to expand on a couple of those for our listeners here. I know a little bit about I statements because I attended your 2-hour one. But why don't we get a little bit into I statements? Like, what is an I statement? If you could share that with our listeners here.
Yeah. Well, first of all, getting rid of labels. Saying to a child you're disrespectful, you're rude, even positive saying you're such a good girl. Labels actually attach to the character of a child, and it makes their self-esteem much more fragile because they think if they make a mistake, they're going to be bad, if they've been labeled good, etc. In order to really separate the behavior from the child, we need to learn how to make specific observations. So the first part of an I statement is to state only what you see or hear. It might sound like you're pulling the cat's tail, or even it's not okay to pull the cat's tail.
Okay.
You know, an I statement, too, is being able to own your feelings and needs. It's 4 o'clock. I thought you'd be home at 5. That's the observation. The feeling, I've been really scared and worried. The need, super important to me that I know you're safe. And the request to get your need met for reassurance might be, can we talk about this? Can we figure out a plan? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Instead of, where have you been? You're always so late. You were out there. You didn't care about me. Like, our language can be extremely aggressive with assumptions.
Oh, for sure. With assumptions, yeah. Isn't that the truth?
And put commands, yeah.
That's amazing. Now, the other thing that I heard you say there, and I just wanted to know a little bit more about, was boundaries. Now, when you say boundaries, like, what exactly do you mean by that?
Okay, so kids learn about boundaries, you know, from us. So, for example, intrusiveness is a really important one. Intrusiveness is when we pick at a child's body. We don't give them that space of, you know, just being in charge of their bodies, making them hug somebody that they don't know.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, ever remember what it was like to be tickled and it was just so awful? But, you know, sometimes even that, because we've got to be sensitive to a kid's, you know, physical boundaries. But then as they get older, to their choices, and, you know, as they become kind of preteens, teens, that their bedrooms are their bedrooms, and not to be intrusive and go into their private world. Or it's intrusive to make kids talk about things all the time, you know, or to intrude on their choices. So intrusiveness is one huge boundary violation. And kids learn about respect for privacy and, you know, people's space by the respect that we show the kids.
Isn't that true?
Other boundaries, and a really big one we've got to watch today, Kale, is overindulgence. And overindulgence is not just with things, but it's with our time. And so if I bend over backwards and give my kids more time than I can afford to by driving here, there, and everywhere, that's overindulgent. The message is, your life is more important than mine. Or if I spoil a child by giving them too much too soon, I can really ruin that kid's character for the rest of his life. And so spoiling isn't given with love, you know, and healthy attention. Spoiling is when we don't let kids work towards something. And again, too much too soon.
Yeah.
Over-control is a huge boundary violation because it doesn't allow a child to develop a sense of what they know, how they feel about things. And so over-control can be done by you know, not letting kids take normal risks. And what happens there is kids are either going to go underground and do things and you're not, right?
It's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're guilty of that one big time.
Or they're going to rebel, which is actually a healthy way to deal with over-control, just to say, hey, that's not fair, I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Or the tragic way of dealing with over-control is to conform, which means you're cutting off your need for, you know, belonging to your peers and, you know, whatever that need might be. So
yeah.
The boundary chapter is a real wake-up call for people, and
it's usually
information that people have actually never heard about before.
Yeah, boundaries is huge. Huge, huge.
You're going to be in for quite a ride
I'm pumped. So I just want to say to you guys listening, if you're hearing this and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing, I want to hear more of this, she teaches courses and you can go take them and they're very reasonably priced and there's one coming up in February. Okay, I want to, we've gone totally off base from where I thought we were going to go, but, you know, I loved what you talked about earlier when you were saying that, you know, maybe you know, inadvertently, when we control ourselves and behave in a certain way, our kids pick up on that. And so it's interesting how often your parenting is, if you can control yourself, your kids learn from that. And that's really a good way of role modeling, isn't it?
You know what? Our role modeling, it's been researched. That is the primary influence over our children's moral development.
Wow.
And, you know, and the thing is, we're so busy trying to teach all these lessons to kids and pontificating. It doesn't do a thing, and actually it interferes.
Yeah, because they can see what you're doing anyway, right? And they're going to, yeah, it's true.
You know what it's like to be around someone who's always right and trying to tell you how to do things. You know, like kids feel the same way we do.
Yeah.
It's a real turnoff.
Yeah, I think
But I often think, is it as simple as being aware of our own feeling states? And so one of the big things that I talk about in the course that you're going to take, the Parenting Children and Teens, is that there are three ways to be aware of feelings, or say work with feelings. One of them is not being aware, which is denial, just pretending everything is really nice. And you heard me say that in that presentation that you were at, that when we try to stuff our feelings and be nice, what happens is we end up being resentful, and, you know, we end up with physical illness when we deny our feelings, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Another way of dealing with feelings is to go into lust. And lust is when our behavior is driven by our feelings, you know, so we deny them and they go over to lust, where we find ourselves screaming and yelling at our kids or doing something that doesn't match our integrity. And the only healthy way to deal with feelings is to be aware of the feelings that you have and to pay attention to your needs. And so how that relates to our parenting is that we're able to set limits with our kids in a way that's healthy and not stuffing until we get really, really angry. And talking about needs is a wonderful way to bring meaning to limits. Anyway, that's a whole other subject.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're almost out of time, but I do have one thing, and this just kind of came up. You know, the whole issue with screen time now is massive. I mean, kids are, we know that screens are addictive. We know that there's, you know, some negative connotations associated with them. I'm sure there's lots of good stuff too, but what's your take on screens? And I guess the other thing is too, do you have any suggestions to parents out there about screening? Like, should there be boundaries? Should there not be boundaries? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I talk about teaching different levels of responsibility to kids. Young kids need you to be in charge. They need to have screen time very, very limited. And then, you know, so we're totally in charge with that.
When you say young, you're meaning what age approximately?
Under five.
Okay, so under five, it's like, boom, this is what you get. Yep. And okay, yep.
And it's not a right. It's a privilege that parents have to be really clear that they're in control of.
Okay.
And then, you know, between 5 and maybe 12, kids can be given a little bit more screen time, but I think we need screen-free time, screen-free zones. If we don't put limits on it, then, of course, they're going to be gravitating toward their screens. And I think, you know, the balance has to be, however much screen time you have, you need to match that with physical activity.
Okay.
But if we're talking about screen time and why we're concerned about it with our kids, we actually have to think about what is the problem, why am I concerned, because it's got to make sense to your kids.
Mm.
And then you've got to negotiate it with your kids. You can't just say, okay, you get this much screen time and that much screen time. Really talk about it with them at a neutral time. A lot of kids have a hard time getting off their screen, and there can be a lot of power struggles just getting them off the screen. So it's a good neutral time discussion to have with your kids.
Yeah, for anyone that's listening, when Allison uses that word neutral time, I think you're meaning like a time when no emotions are heated, like sort of stepping away from the situation and then coming back to it when people are calm. Is that what you mean?
I sure do, because if we get angled in a power struggle, then you know what we're going to do. We're going to say, okay, that's it, no screen for a month.
Yeah, and then of course it never happens, and absolutely. Oh, that was, what a great chat we've had. I mean, any closing remarks before we sort of end up here?
I think that, give yourself some love as a parent, because it's a tough job.
It is.
And everybody's so busy working, and we're all trying to do our best. And just don't get caught in the guilt-anger cycle so that you feel so guilty that you're no longer looking after yourself. Just, again, be gentle with yourself as parents.
That was amazing, Allison. Well, listen, thanks so much for joining me today. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, you're so welcome. It was a pleasure.
Good. Well, listen, so we're out of time. To anyone listening, I know that you got some great stuff out of this podcast, so I hope you share it with people. To everyone out there, to Allison, we look forward to you being with us again for the next edition of Back to Health.
Thanks for listening. We hope you have enjoyed this episode. For more information about Dr. Kale, visit his website, vfcairo.com, where you can read his blog and hit links to his YouTube channel and Facebook page for videos and more. Book an appointment with Dr. Kale today at Victoria Family Chiropractic by calling 250-592-5553 and get started on a path to being your best.